Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to BT's results conference call for the third quarter ended 31st December 2016. My name is Sunny, and I'm your coordinator for today. Throughout the presentation, you will remain on listen only. If you need assistance at any time during your call, please key star zero on your phone, and a coordinator will be pleased to assist you. I would like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded, and now I'd like to hand over to you, to Carl.
Thanks and welcome everyone. My name is Carl Murdoch-Smith and I'm the Group IR Director for BT. On the call today we have Gavin Patterson, Chief Executive, and Simon Louth, our Group Finance Director. In the room we also have the CEOs of our lines of business. Before we start, I'd like to draw your attention to the usual caution on forward-looking statements. Please see the slide that accompanies today's call and our latest annual report and Form 20F for examples of the factors that could cause actual results to differ from any forward-looking statements we may make. Both the slide and the annual report can be found on our website. I'll now hand over to Gavin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. Before I get into the Q3 results, I'd like to say a few words about Tuesday's announcement and what has clearly been a very difficult week for BT. I want to start by making it clear how angry I am that the integrity of BT has been undermined by the wrongdoing in one part of our business. What the independent investigation we commissioned has discovered in Italy was completely unacceptable. Inappropriate behaviours, accounting or otherwise, are not something that we tolerate in BT. As soon as we became aware of the issues in Italy, we launched an investigation, disclosed what had been done to us, and have taken action against the individuals who have harmed our business. And we now have appointed a new chief executive to BT Italy, who will take charge on the 1st of February. Simon will address the investigation in more detail shortly and the impact that it has had on our outlook, which we revised on Tuesday. We will use this call to reaffirm confidence in our strategy and how we are delivering on our key priorities, set out the strong performance we've seen in our consumer-facing businesses in Q3, clarify the challenges in the public sector and global services businesses, take you through the group's financial performance and outlook in more detail, but I'll start with our strategy and cover the business performance. Simon will cover the financial performance and then we'll turn it over to Q&A. So let's begin on slide 4. Whilst this has been a difficult couple of days for the business and our shareholders, our strategic focus remains clear. BT continues to be one of the best positioned converged telecoms and content distribution groups in Europe. We have a strong position in fixed and mobile networks, in consumer content, broadband delivery, and in the emerging market for the Internet of Things. We remain strongly profitable and cash generative. Our strategy remains the right one. But we are not complacent, and this management team is totally focused on executing our strategy to be a strong, competitive, growing, and integrated telecoms provider. This means we will continue to provide our customers with better products and increasingly high-quality services. This will go hand-in-hand with improved customer experience. At the same time, we'll continue to transform our costs, including through the integration of the EE. It's by doing this that we'll be able to deliver sustainable, profitable revenue growth and generate growing cash flow. Now to slide 5, where I want to review Q3 performance. Across most of the group, we've seen robust financial performance in Q3. Both of our consumer-facing units are trading strongly, with EE delivering record growth and good momentum in the consumer business. Our UK SME and UK corporate businesses are performing well, and Openreach has seen record fibre growth. However, this has been overshadowed by Italy and two other areas, the UK public sector and international corporate markets, and we'll address these in detail shortly. We've made strong progress on our KPIs. Openreach has added almost 500,000 fibre broadband customers, its best ever result. Meanwhile, postpaid mobile net adds of 276,000 shows the breadth of our appeal in the mobile market. We're pushing ahead with the reforms at Openreach, particularly on governance and customer service, and believe an agreement can be reached with Ofcom on its digital communications review. We continue to believe these changes address Ofcom's concerns and could form the basis for a fair, proportionate, and sustainable settlement. Finally, delivering a great customer experience remains a top priority, and we've seen real progress in Q3. So, for example, turning to slide six, we told you last summer that we would upgrade our consumer repair standard, and we have delivered on that. This means our customers are now getting their faults fixed in less than half the time it used to take. We're adding around 900 new U.K. and Ireland service roles in Q4 and have started deploying new tools and training for our existing agents. We've introduced a new process for Ethernet orders. Already, more than half of Wholesale and Ventures' biggest CP customers are using it, which means they're able to cut the time it takes to place an order from around three-quarters of an hour to under 10 minutes. In Openreach, engineers have started using a mobile app for reporting damage to the network. Quicker reporting means we can fix it faster with less impact on service. We know there is more to do on customer experience, but we're making progress, and I'm confident our investments will deliver further improvements. Moving now to the lines of business, and I'll start with consumer on slide seven. Revenue was up 4%, mainly driven by broadband and TV, which grew 8%. Revenue also benefited from an 8% increase in ARPU, supported by a further uptick in RGUs per customer. As you can see in the chart, we're consistently growing ARPU. EBITDA was down 5%, or around £14 million, as we're choosing to reinvest the benefits of growth back into improving service and to drive future growth. This includes the cost of bringing on board new UK and Ireland-based customer service agents, as well as our investment in BT Mobile handsets, which we said was around £100 million across the year, and a full quarter of our new Premier League contract with rights charges in total up £25 million year on year. Our broadband additions were healthy, as you can see. Importantly, 51% of our retail broadband base are now taking a fibre service. This is a better product with an improved experience for the customer. Our TV business also grew its base by 52,000, and BT Sport viewing figures were up 15%, demonstrating the strength of the proposition. This was a quarter in which consumer really started to build its future service capability, with around 500 new UK customer service roles added in Q3, with the foundations laid for this to accelerate to around 900 new roles in Q4. Turning now to EE on slide eight. EE is making strong progress ahead of our expectations and reinforcing our belief in the significant value available from bringing it into the group. Revenue was up 2%. Turning to revenue growth for the first time, as you can see in the chart. This has been driven by our more for more strategy and by volume growth, as demonstrated by strong postpaid net adds across the group. EBITDA of £277 million was down 7% against a tough comparator in the prior year. We're choosing to reinvest our growing top line into the latest devices to drive market share. We've also seen strong demand at the high end, driving this investment, with premium customers wanting to use the UK's best network. 4G geographic coverage is increasing and is now at 75%, well on the way to the 92% coverage we'll reach by September. We intend to maintain our network lead. With plans to make 4G Plus available across hundreds of sites this year, customers with the latest devices will be able to enjoy speeds of well over 100 meg. Turning now to business and public sector on slide nine. Underlying revenue was down 6%, reflecting declines in public sector, with revenue in the rest of the business broadly level with last year. Underlying EBITDA declined 8%. This is entirely down to the headwinds being faced in public sector. We've highlighted before the headwinds in public sector, where we have a handful of large contracts coming to the end. As Simon will explain shortly on our outlook, the revenue from these is coming off faster than we previously expected, and the opportunities to replace these contracts are taking longer to materialize. For Q4, we expect public sector EBITDA to deteriorate even further. Together with a tough comparator, we expect underlying EBITDA for BPS to see a double-digit decline. Outside of public sector, our corporate business saw higher ARPU in calls and lines, while SME benefited from more IP lines. We're starting to see clear benefits from adding mobility services to our portfolio. We'll continue to invest in driving mobile and IP propositions into our SME and corporate customers, where we're seeing really good demand. On to global services on slide 10. Underlying revenue ex-transit, adjusted for the acquisition of EE, was down 7%. As I mentioned just now, the Italian investigation has impacted our results in the quarter. If we exclude Italy, GS underlying revenue was down 2%. This was mainly driven by EMEA, where we had benefited from a significant milestone last year. We delivered 6% growth in the UK, helped by strong IP exchange volumes. While Europe was down 15%, it was flat, excluding the revenues from our Italian business. EBITDA was down 78%, reflecting the impact of Italy. That was taken in the quarter. Excluding the Italian business, EBITDA was down 8%. Operating cash was an outflow of $115 million, reflecting the lower EBITDA and the unwind of inappropriate working capital positions in Italy. We've made less progress in developing our pipeline of new opportunities in international markets than we planned. You can see this in our order intake, which was down 14% in the quarter. We have therefore reduced our growth expectations in these markets, which has impacted our financial outlook, as Simon will explain shortly. But we remain confident that we have a strong combination of services, skills, and networks that our competitors will find difficult to match. For example, we've continued to grow our cloud-based services, which reached 1 million end users this quarter. This combination of assets will allow us to serve the needs of our multinational customers and drive growth over the medium term. Turning now to wholesale and ventures on slide 11. Underlying revenue, excluding transit, was down 3% as a result of continued declines in private circuits and call volumes. This was, however, a better performance than in the first half, benefiting from good growth in fibre broadband and a 14% increase in the Ethernet rental base. Ventures again delivered a quarter of revenue growth. EBITDA was down 4% like-for-like, reflecting the lower revenue, but our order intake was up strongly and was three times higher than a year ago. This obviously reflects the re-sign of the Virgin MVNO deal, although even without this, the order intake was up. During the quarter, we started operating Pelipod within Ventures, which provides a secure supply chain solution. We also announced the launch of Link UK, which will see the replacement of many high street phone boxes with next generation kiosks, offering services such as free Wi-Fi as well as free calls. Link UK is a new proposition, with revenue being driven by digital advertising. Overall, we expect to see ongoing declines in some of our legacy products. We see good prospects in hosted communications and Ethernet, and we're excited about the growth prospects within our ventures business. And lastly, turning to Openreach on slide 12. Revenue was down 1% against a strong quarter last year, with 31% growth in fibre slightly outweighed by the regulatory drag. Operating costs down 1% left EBITDA flat, as lower lever costs broadly balanced out the ongoing costs of working towards our service commitments on clearing Ethernet tails and halving missed appointments. Openreach's operating metrics were encouraging. Fibre net connections were almost 500,000, our highest ever. Just under half of these were from external providers, and this provides the number of premises connected to 7.2 million. That's 27% of premises passed. And Openreach continues to focus on its service commitments. It's on track to meet all of Ofcom's copper minimum service levels this financial year. Turning to slide 13, I wanted to put the relative performances of the differing parts of the BT in context. Operations that account for around 90% of last year's EBITDA have grown by 2% year to date, but we do face three issues that have impacted our financial outlook. Public sector is seeing EBITDA declines of more than 30% due to the completion of a handful of large contracts. This is set to deteriorate further in Q4. Market conditions are not, as yet, providing the opportunities to replace these with new profitable business. International corporate markets are also seeing difficult market conditions, down 15% year to date, albeit largely as a result of a one-off issue in the Americas and EMEA. This has limited our growth opportunities versus previous plans. And the situation in Italy, as I said, is unacceptable and has clearly impacted growth and will be addressed. We face challenges, but they are within specific parts of the group. The vast majority of our business is performing well and delivering on our strategy. And with that, I'll hand over to Simon.
Well, thank you, Gavin, and good morning to everyone. I'm going to cover three topics. I will first summarise our financial results for the third quarter. I will then describe the findings and the implications of the financial investigation into our Italian operations. Finally and critically, I will explain in some detail the key drivers of our financial outlook for this year and for 2017-18. So turning to slide 15, I'm going to start by summarizing the financial results for the third quarter. After adjusting for FX, Transit, and the EE acquisition, underlying revenue was down 1.5%. The consumer-facing businesses delivered good growth. Consumer delivered top-line growth of 4%, fueled by volume growth and increased ARPU. EE grew revenues by 2% on a like-for-like basis, driven by our more-for-more pricing strategy. However, both global services and business and public sector saw sharp revenue declines, reflecting the impact of Italy and the completion of some contracts in the UK public sector. Underlying group EBITDA was down 8% on a like-for-like basis, reflecting the revenue decline and the impact of Italy, combined with the investments that we're making to improve customer service, notably in inshoring and Openreach, and investments to drive future growth, particularly in mobile handsets. The specific items of £281 million reflect the change in accounting estimates as a result of the Italy investigation, together with an increase in provisions for regulatory risks. I will describe the financial and accounting impacts of the Italy investigation shortly. Adjusted earnings per share was down 24%, reflecting the EBITDA decline, higher depreciation, and increased shares outstanding. Reported earnings per share, including the impact of specific items, declined by 59%. Normalised free cash flow was down £298 million, reflecting the decline in EBITDA and working capital outflows associated with the Italian investigation, as well as the phasing of FA Premier League rights. We closed the quarter with net debt just under £9 billion. That's down around £600 million on the end of the second quarter. And moving to slide 16, I will now describe the findings of the investigation into our Italian operations, and I'll summarise the steps that we're taking to address the root causes. At Q2, we announced that an initial internal investigation of our Italian business had identified historical accounting errors and judgments requiring reassessment. At that time, we took a £145 million write-down, being our then best estimate of the financial impact of these issues. Since then, we've undertaken a comprehensive balance sheet review, and KPMG have completed a detailed independent investigation. These investigations have revealed that the extent and the complexity of inappropriate behaviour in the Italian business were far greater than previously identified, and they've revealed improper accounting practices and a complex set of improper sales, purchase, factoring, and leasing transactions. These activities have resulted in the overstatement of earnings in our Italian business over a number of years. The adjustments identified have increased from the £145 million announced at Q2 to a total of around £513 million. This differs from the total of around £530 million that we disclosed on Tuesday, because we have now finalised the accounting treatment and exchange rate effects have reduced the quantum of the errors revised in the prior period comparatives. Of the total of £513 million, £268 million represents errors which have been revised in prior year comparative results. The remaining £245 million represents changes in accounting estimates which have been treated as a specific item in this year. This includes the £145 million which was recognised at Q2, and a further £100 million that we have recognised in this quarter. The outcome of the investigation has reduced our Q3 adjusted revenue and adjusted EBITDA by around £120 million, and our Q3 normalised free cash flow by around £100 million. For the full year, 2016-17, relative to our prior outlook, we expect a decrease in adjusted revenue of around £200 million, a decrease in adjusted EBITDA of around £175 million, and a decrease of up to £500 million of normalised free cash flow due to the EBITDA impact and the one-off unwind of the effects of inappropriate working capital transactions. For 2017-18, we expect a similar annual impact to adjusted revenue and adjusted EBITDA as in 2016-17, with the EBITDA impact flowing through to normalised free cash flow. We've taken immediate steps to strengthen the finance organisation and the financial processes and controls in our Italy business. The new chief executive's priorities will be to strengthen the management team, improve the governance and financial controls, and develop a comprehensive plan to restore the loss-making business to profitability. Following the initial internal investigation at Q2, we launched a broader review of financial processes, systems and controls across the group to ensure that these are robust in light of the findings of the Italy investigation. So moving to slide 17, I will turn to the issues impacting our UK public sector business. Now, for the total business and public sector, our underlying year-to-date EBITDA has declined by 6%. As Gavin described, the corporate and SME businesses continue to perform well, benefiting in particular from the integration of EE, and have delivered 5% year-on-year growth. In contrast, the public sector business has experienced a 31% year-on-year decline in EBITDA. This decline is being driven by the completion of a focused portfolio of large profitable public sector contracts during this year and next year. The majority of these contracts will be out of our revenue by the end of this year, although two large ones will work their way out during next year. While we had anticipated the cessation of these contracts, we'd expected, based on past performance, to see continued demand for additional volumes and services through the transition periods. We'd also forecast for our investment in sales and business development to generate profitable new contracts to replace the expiring ones. We've now revised our expectations for the rate of decline in the historic contracts and for the pace and scale with which we can win profitable new business. This judgment's been informed by the absence of visible pickup in demand in the fourth quarter, when we traditionally see increased public sector activity, and by the fact that our pipeline is less developed than we'd forecast. Challenges to business development and revenue growth stem from a range of factors, including the wider pressure on public sector budgets, increasing decentralization of procurement activity away from BT's historic strengths, and a more intense competitive landscape in which we are retaining our pricing discipline. We're reviewing our product service propositions, our sales force priorities, and a cost base to respond to these market forces. As I will describe shortly, our revised expectations for our UK public sector business is reflected in our updated outlook for this year and for 2017-18. Moving into slide 18, I will now address the issues impacting our international markets in global services. Stripping out the impact of Italy, underlying revenue in global services is about 0.5% up year to date. Steady growth in the UK and Europe, excluding Italy, has offset a decline in the Americas associated with the insourcing of services by a major customer and a decline in EMEA due to the anniversary of milestone revenue in the previous year. We remain confident in the strength of our product service propositions, particularly our cloud of clouds and security portfolios, but we will maintain pricing and profit discipline in competitive markets. While we've grown the business slightly this year, we've made less progress than we had forecast in developing our order book and pipeline of new opportunities, especially in international markets, where the 12-month rolling order intake has trended down. This is particularly marked in our new business and growth order intake, which grew last year and was anticipated to continue to grow this year. But in fact, we've seen a decline, reflecting a lower than expected level of customer activity. While we're taking action to address this trend, we are now more cautious on the outlook for the international markets for this year and next, and we've revised downwards our expectations of future growth rates in this part of our business. And this is reflected in our updated outlook for this year and for 2017-18. Turning to slide 19, I will now provide a brief update on the progress of the e-integration and our cost transformation programs. The integration of EE remains firmly on track to achieve our target of around £100 million of cost synergies in this financial year. During the quarter, we successfully insourced EE's core network maintenance, improving service and lowering costs. We also established a single organization to plan contact center capacity and operations across BT, which will allow us to share capacity and drive best practice. We remain confident in the delivery of our longer-term goals of £400 million of annual cost synergies and £1.6 billion in value of revenue synergy. Our cost transformation programs are delivering sustained productivity improvements in critical customer-facing and back-office processes. We have, for example, recently launched pilot programs to deploy robotics and greater automation with the objective of improving efficiency in our accounts payable processes. Also in December, we combined the design and the service functions in global services to establish end-to-end accountability for the delivery of new services, which will help us improve customer experience and reduce service penalties. We've already turned our cost transformation efforts and resources to addressing the cost base in public sector and global services in light of our revised revenue outlook. Turning now to slide 20, I'll describe our outlook for the business, which we announced earlier this week. For 2016-17, we now expect underlying revenue to be broadly flat and for EBITDA to be around £7.6 billion. The £300 million reduction in our EBITDA outlook for this year reflects the combined impact of the Italy investigation, the faster decline in the UK public sector, and the slower growth in international markets. As we've disclosed, the Italy investigation contributes around £175 million of the reduction in guidance. Of the remaining around £125 million, the public sector accounts for approximately two-thirds, and international markets about a third. We now expect normalised free cash flow for 2016-17 to be around £2.5 billion. The reduction of about £600 million comes from our previous outlook, reflects the lower EBITDA in UK public sector and international markets, and a decrease of up to £500 million of normalised free cash flow due to Italy. This £500 million reduction from Italy comprises the EBITDA impact and the one-off unwind of the effects of inappropriate working capital transactions. For 2017-18, we now expect both underlying revenue and EBITDA to be broadly flat and for normalised free cash flow to be in the range of £3.0 to £3.2 billion. As with the current year, the reduction in normalised free cash flow from our prior guidance of £3.6 billion reflects the combined impact of the Italy investigation, the faster decline in the UK public sector, and the slower growth in international markets. The Italy investigation contributes around £175 million of the reduction, Of the remaining reduction, the public sector accounts for approximately 2/3 and international markets about 1/3. The EBITDA impacts attract relatively limited tax shields and therefore largely flow through to cash flow. The cash flow range principally reflects uncertainties in the timing of working capital flows. And finally, on shareholder distributions, we continue to expect to grow our dividend per share by at least 10% in this year and next. And as a reminder on share repurchases, we've completed this year's program, having spent £206 million in the first half. With that, I will now hand you back to Gavin.
Thank you, Simon. To conclude then, on slide 24, we remain confident in our strategy and are focused on delivering it. Across most of the group, this quarter saw robust performance. Unfortunately, that progress has been overshadowed by our Italian business and the tough conditions in the public sector and international corporate markets. We're committed to ensuring that we learn from this and take the necessary actions to strengthen our controls to prevent this from happening again. Our strategy remains to build a competitive and fully converged telecoms business, and my management team and I are determined to deliver this. And with that, we'll move to Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, your question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone. If you then decide to withdraw the question, simply key star two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you'll be advised when to ask your question. All other lines remain on listen only. So just to remind you, to ask a question on the audio, please key star, then one on your telephone. Thank you.
Very good.
You have a question on the audio. Your first question comes from the line of Paul Marsh from Berenberg. Please proceed. You're live in the call.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the question. Just on Italy, two questions, really. Firstly, what's your time frame for removing that loss from Italy, which I understand is in the region of 80 to 90 million of negative EBITDA? And then secondly, it sounds like this only really came to light because of a whistleblower. So what has really changed about the processes and the management controls that means that you would catch this kind of abuse going forward? Thanks.
Simon, do you want to take that?
Yes, certainly. So, Paul, thanks for the question. Firstly, in our guidance in reducing the EBITDA by around £175 million, we clearly see the need for a program during the remainder of this financial year and into next year to reposition, restructure that business and move it to a sustainably profitable position. Clearly, we would be extremely disappointed if we had not moved to that as we moved into the 18-19 year. Turning to your second question, the investigation has revealed, as I described, a set of improper accounting practices, a set of improper transactions, and a considerable range of activities disguised to cover that up and to manipulate the reporting into the group and indeed to auditors. Having completed or substantially completed that investigation, we have obviously moved very swiftly within Italy to strengthen replacing large elements of the finance organization. We have taken steps to make key changes to the processes and the controls where we had identified weaknesses. Those are being implemented in Italy. We have also conducted a wider review to ensure that the wider process or the process and controls across the wider BT are robust in light of what we find, in light of what we found. Suffice to say, we have identified a set of issues and in the controls which needed to be addressed, and they have now been addressed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Who's up next?
Thank you. Your next question comes from Michael Bishop from Goldman Sachs. Please proceed, you're live in the call.
Morning, Michael.
Yes, hi, Michael here. Just two questions, please. Just following up on Italy, I mean, if you don't manage to get it back to profitability, is there any reason why you couldn't sell the business, or at least put it, some of the non-profitable contracts into runoff? And just on that, what are the puts and takes of selling a business like Italy, clearly with some network structure assets? And then just quickly on the decentralization of contracts in the UK, I mean, doesn't this mean that you're going to enter a more structurally competitive market because this potentially plays into the hands of local or more localized operators like Virgin Media? Could you discuss why you think you've got visibility on the outlook there? Thanks very much.
Very good. Well, maybe I talk to the first question, and then Graham will talk about our ambitions in public sector. Excuse me. In terms of Italy, we believe we can get the business back on track and ensure that it is making a contribution to the overall group. We have some very big customers coming out of Italy, particularly in the multinational space. And they're good contracts, and we've been working with these customers for a number of years. We will need to go and look at the cost base in some detail, but we're confident that we can get it into a profitable situation. Of course, if we can't, we will look at all options for the business going forward. But I'm at this stage, I'm confident that we can get it into a profitable position. And Graham, do you want to talk about public sector?
Yeah, I mean, the disaggregation and the regional agenda is not new. It's been going on since 2008. And when you actually look at our business, I mean, obviously it's pretty shocking when you look at the EBITDA decline in public sector as a whole, but 90% of that decline in the year is due to the six contracts that we've discussed. So the reason we're confident about the regional agenda going forward is if you look at the rest of our business, SME and corporate, it's founded on, and with the integration of EE, it's really strengthened, it's founded on strong distribution and scale, which really, which is unparalleled actually in the UK market. And as you can see from those segments, we are growing profitability well, 5% year to date. So, you know, we have already been working on strengthening our regional public sector team. We've been doing that over the last 6 months. You know, we changed out the bulk of our public sector management team in Q1. So we have been working on strengthening distribution. But the reason we're confident that we can move this forward is that we actually are doing this already in the other segments and doing it well and are the market leader. And what you will see as this moves forward is that the shape of the business will change to be more predictable with less profit spikes due to the fact that the implementation of a much more standardized model with very strong distribution is really where we're trying to take the business.
Very good. Next question, please.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Maurice Patrick from Barclays. Please proceed. You're live in the call.
Well, thanks, guys. Morning. So a fibre question. So strong growth again this quarter in fibre, but you have seen lots of comments from the new government minister about wanting fibre to the home investment rather than the GFAST plans you have. So you've talked about the 2 million fibre to the home, 10 million GFAST. I guess you've got updated thoughts on that. If there is pressure to increase investment on fibre to the home, given the revised lower level of free cash flow that you're seeing because of the lower profitability in international and business and your 10% commitment still of dividend growth, just curious your thoughts on the ability to increase CapEx if that ability comes, if that potential comes, or if it's not at all in your plans. Thank you.
Very good. Well, I think a few people might like to talk to this. Maybe I'd give a few words of to kick off. Maybe Clyde talk about his views on this, and maybe Simon talk about the CapEx position going forwards. Look, in terms of the technology, you know, what is clear is with NGA1, there is still significant demand across the business. So, I mean, that's illustrated, I think, by the record number of net adds that Openreach have posted this quarter, almost half a million, 27% take-up of homes passed.
and that's a pretty strong result. We're not resting on that. We've already started gearing up on NGA2. And NGA2 for us is a mixture of technologies. Yes, there's GFast, which gives us speed and scale quickly at price points that we know customers want. But it at the same time, we share the government's view that over the long term, that FTTP will be more of our network going forwards. We will continue to build our FTTP footprint. And Clive has done a lot of work over the last year to really improve the structural economics of FTTP. So now it's a good point to hand over to Clive to add some thoughts.
Okay, thanks, Gavin. Look, we believe in a mixed economy of technologies. The update on GFast is that we're rolling out those side pods on the cabinets at quite a pace now. We have the production hardware, we have the production firmware, and we're building a footprint quite quickly now. The first pilot customers, the indications are that the performance of the product over the new equipment is pretty much spot on what we had predicted from the labs and the earlier field trials, and I am very pleased with that. So I'm very pleased with where we stand right now on GFast. We spent a lot of time this year honing our techniques for delivering FTTP. And the challenge for OpenReach is to show that we can hit lower cost points than have historically been thought possible. The more we can do that, the more we can consider adjusting the mix in the 10 million of GFast and 2 million of FTTP. We're learning all the time on FTTP. We are attaching more customers, selling more services on our existing FTTP footprint than ever before, and we are working very hard to hone the customer experience of provisioning on that FTTP platform. So we're very focused on improving every aspect of our FTTP delivery, customer experience and cost. And if we can do that, then we can look forward to, over time, justifying raising the FTTP delivery schedule.
And CapEx?
Well, finally on CapEx, the outlook reflects the existing investment plans that we laid out earlier this year. That comprises, includes the NGA2 program of GFast and FTTP that we'd set out earlier this year, and that, as Gavin and Clive described, we see that as a program that we can flex between different technologies as we move forward, and we are working all the time to find ways of delivering that program more efficiently and more productively for our customers. If there are opportunities to bring additional value to customers beyond that, we see those as providing strong returns to our shareholders, we do have capacity as we move forward to consider our investment plans, that I think really is sort of beyond the timetable of the network investment in GFast and FTTP that we've talked about.
Very clear. Thank you. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Steve Malcolm from Arete Research.
Hi, Steve.
Hi there. Good morning. I bet you're all looking forward to the weekend. few questions. I mean, first of all, just sort of more broadly on global services. I mean, if I look into next year, you've got a business that's generating $5.5 billion of revenue, and might scrape towards £100 million of EBITDA less CapEx. I mean, that's clearly not very good. I mean, is it time for a more radical rethink about the way you serve multinationals and large enterprise outside the UK? And what should we hope for longer term, from that business? Secondly, just on BPS, I just want to sort of check the math. I mean, it looks like you're going to lose about £200 million of EBITDA this year. You can lose another 160 next year. That EBITDA is going to half on a two-year view. First of all, is that right? And secondly, what are the big risks that it could half again, and why are you confident that this is a sort of you know, one-off-ish impact looking into 2017-18. And finally, just on Champions League, I'm not going to ask you about your kind of bidding strategy.
It's a four-part question, Steve.
Sorry?
It's like a four-part question.
Well, it's a lot of issues. Just on Champions League, I'm going to go for it anyway. You know, if Sky were to sort of aggressively outbid you, do you think that might be a CMA issue? Do you think it, you know, almost, you know, someone who's on the wrong side of regulation quite a lot, could that be perceived as abuse of, you know, a dominant market position in terms of hoarding rights? Thanks.
Okay, I'll take the GS question to start with. Simon, do you want to do BPS?
Sure.
Yeah, and then John, do you want to talk about Champions League?
Sure,
okay.
Yeah.
Look, on global services, you know, the results are where we want them to be. We're very clear about that. We think there is more growth in the market, but the structural financials of the business need to improve. So we will be, we've already started a piece of work to look at what needs to happen to the business, what do we need to do to make that the case. And we're prepared to look at a range of different options. So it's very much on our agenda. There is a core demand for these products and services, and we have a strong proposition. It's just that it's not profitable enough, and that's something we must fundamentally address. Business and public sector?
Yes, so the decline in business and public sector is of the sort of order that you described, and that does reflect, as I described in my remarks, the completion of this portfolio of historic contracts, much of which have run out this year. There's another couple that are continue to run out during the course of next year, and at that point, that sort of run that the completion of those contracts has largely come out of the base, and we can then, as Graham described, sort of build from there. But Graham, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, it's worth adding that, you know, obviously outside of these six contracts, public sector contracts, we also have a number of other large contracts in this space, not necessarily public sector, private sector as well. It's worth noting that we have re-signed and renewed the bulk of those over the last 12 months. So we're entering a period where we don't have many major contracts up for renewal during the period of when we cycle out the large public sector contracts.
So I think hopefully, as you can hear from that, this has been a particular challenge for us in this current year and flowed through into next. But a lot there's a lot of activity in public sector and more broadly in BPS that can underpin our longer term confidence in the sector.
And John, Champions League?
Yes, on the Champions League, I think the best answer to this is probably to look at the respective cases of the two parties, ourselves and Ofcom, and that came to court to the Competitions Appeals Tribunal in October. And so from our side, there's already a market problem because Sky's got more than 70% of the customer revenues in this sector, so there's a problem, and there's a market problem now. And then the Ofcom case is that they didn't say that they were happy in the conditions of competition. In fact, they actually expressed some concerns on that, although those concerns are mitigated through Sky's claim and that they're supplying their channels widely, although they're supplying them fairly reluctantly to us, it must be said. But the Ofcom case said that going forward there'd be a strict regime of keeping tabs on the market to look at future changes and implications for competition. So I think that strict monitoring regime should hopefully prove some kind of check on further deteriorations in the competition and conditions in this market.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Polo Tang from UBS.
Hi, Polo.
Yeah, hi. Just a few different questions. The first one is really just in terms of postpaid mobile net adds. You're obviously doing very well, but can you give any colour in terms of where the net adds are coming from? So, for example, is it the business side, BT Mobile, or EE? And do you think you're taking share from any particular operator? Second question is really just in terms of fiber. Can you remind us what the cost per home passed is for GDOT Fast versus FTTH? And the final question is really just in terms of Project Lightning from Virgin Media. Is there any impact in terms of BT in the quarter? Thanks.
On the net adds performance on mobile, I'm going to ask Mark to add a wee bit of colour. He has been performing so well. But the strong number, 276,000, is across all the business, so consumer and business lines of business. And I think it's fair to say that we're seeing progress, strength in consumer, we're seeing strength in EE, we're seeing strength in business as we're adding mobile to our IP portfolio in the SME and corporate markets. And I think we've just got a strong market position and we're seeing the benefits in the market itself. So, it's strength across the board. In the last quarter, we also launched Family SIM in the consumer space, which allows you to get multiple SIMs at increasing discounts, which works extremely well for big families, and there are a few of those in the room, I think. So the net is on that strength across the board. Any colour, Mark, from your perspective?
Yeah, I guess in addition to that, we were very pleased with the iPhone 7 launch. That was a big handset launch for us. Remains a very competitive market, with obviously new entrants and existing players all trying to take share in a market in Europe which has got the lowest prices. So in that context, I think we're pleased with the revenue performance and the net adds. Black Friday this year was bigger than last year, so that's reflected in the net adds performance. It remains a very competitive market. We're pleased with how we've done. And we'll continue to focus on our strategy, which is delivering good results at the moment.
I'll ask Clyde to talk about Lightning, but just on the cost per home passed of the fibre, we never give you this figure, and I know you ask for it quite frequently. And the reason we don't is that it can change quite dramatically depending on the topology of the network and the insights and the progress that we've made, in particular on FTTP. So, it is... it's a range of numbers depending on where we're rolling it out and the technology we use. So I'm not going to answer that one.
What I would say is we work very hard over the year to reduce the cost to deploy.
Of course.
And we stay very focused on doing that in the various topologies. So whether it be apartment blocks or suburbia or even ultra-rural, we're working on techniques that reduce the cost per home passed. And to the question around GFast, the way to think about GFast is that we leverage infrastructure that is already deployed for VDSL. So we leverage the backhaul from the cabinet, we leverage the power supply that we've paid the local DNO to supply, and then our costs are really just the costs of the new GFast muxes.
And Lightning impact, I think the question was about?
Lightning, yes, we see... Lightning build continuing, but in the quarter we've done well competing with Virgin, not just in Lightning areas but also in their traditional heartland.
So I think you've got the first growth in your lines base in 18 months.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Next question, please.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Paul Sidney from Credit Suisse.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning. Just three quick questions, please. On global services, in the release you mentioned slower progress in the developing pipeline in some markets. I was just wondering, are there any specific countries or geographies or even industry sectors that you're seeing particular pressure? Second question on consumer revenue growth. We did see a sharp slowdown in Q3 versus Q2. I think it was 4% Q3 versus 11% in the previous quarter. I was just wondering, is that just a tougher comp due to timing of price increases or other events, or are there other drivers within that? And then just lastly, a very quick one on BT Sport. Do you think BT could charge for BT Sport without Champions League content? Thank you.
Okay. GS Pipeline, Lewis.
Yeah, I think that what we have seen, is, as Simon said before, is less activity in general in the market than what we were expecting. I think that probably the slowdown of some of these large projects has happened widely in the U.S. We have seen also some slowdown in projects in Latin America, although clearly Asia-Pac has continued to do well, right? And Europe has been, depending on the countries, pretty much stable, I would say.
Okay, a couple of questions on consumer, John?
Yes, on the consumer revenue, and the key difference is the timing of the pricing changes from July this year, September the year before, so that's the main dynamic there. On the go-forward plans for BT Sport, I don't want to comment on the future, not least because my strong preference is to keep the Champions League. But I would say that prior to having the Champions League, there were lots of customers choosing to pay for it.
Very good.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Robert Grindle from Deutsche Bank.
Good morning. Two questions. Please, could you comment on the fall in the share of broadband, retail broadband net adds in Q3? Has the slowdown continued in Q4? Maybe it's not a bad thing if the regulators are scrutinising you at the moment. And then on EE, achieved top-line growth in Q3, which is looks great. The question is, can you provide a bit of colour as to the relative contribution of service revenues and handsets? We don't have the quarter last year, so it's a bit difficult to work out what's going on. Are service revenue growth as good as the total revenue growth? Thanks.
I'll ask Mark just to comment on that in a second. In terms of the first question, I completely got out of my... Broadband net adds. If I look at the broadband net adds, you know, the absolute net adds in the quarter is still a decent number at 82,000, I think it is off the top of my head.
That's right.
Which is a decent number. I think what I would say is you do see some swings depending on promotional activity of some of the players in the market. And certainly from where we can see, Sky promoted broadband a lot more in our Q3 than they did in Q1 and Q2. So I think you see a little bit of that coming through. We had a very strong share in the first half of the year. We're absolutely confident in our broadband proposition, and we've started the fourth quarter, I think, pretty strongly. Fair to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then on mobile, the mobile growth.
Yeah, service revenue growth is consistent with that trend.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nick Lyle from SocGen. Please proceed. You're live in the call.
Hi, Nick. Yeah, morning. It's Nick. Yeah, it's SocGen. A couple, please, Gavin. On the firstly, you've given quite a lot there on flexibility on fibre to the premise, and you've talked about 10 megabits per second, universal service, QoS is going up. So are you actually making any progress with the government on this at all, given the background seems pretty good now? And then secondly, on global services, it's part of that piece of work that you've talked about. Is there a risk that ex-Italy you really have to clamp down on the bidding process and contract take-up for global services as well? So ultimately, we might see a lot higher growth as you put in sort of stringent central functions and maybe a lot less revenue growth as you just bid on less and less, on less and less services. Thanks.
In terms of the discussions with the government around the last 5%, we have made a proposal to the government around how we can help meet their objective to deliver at least 10 megabits per second to the last 5% of the country. It's a mixture of technologies, some FTTC, some FTTP, I think wireless and satellite play a role in it. You know, we've made the offer about, I think, 6 months ago. They are considering it. They have a few questions on it. It comes with the proviso that we're able to make a return on it, of course. We're not doing this as a charity. You know, they'll look and see whether or not there's another way of doing it. So we're ready to support them. I would hope that in the next couple of months they come to a conclusion on it, because, quite frankly, if we don't start acting on this now, we won't be able to meet the objective of delivering this by 2020, which is their stated goal. In terms of bidding for global services, do you want to, whether Lewis or Lewis, do you want to talk to that?
Well, I'll start. I mean, I think the principal challenges I described for us in the international markets, taking Italy to one side, has been a lower level of development of the order book than we'd anticipated, and we've had strong ambition. And the reduction in that order book is principally, as I described, I think Luce elaborated upon, is really reflecting a lower level of their overall expected customer activity, and therefore it's on the demand side of the equation. Within that, we continue to have confidence in the product service propositions we offer and our ability to differentiate what we do. We are, of course, disciplined in pricing and we're focused on profits and cash as opposed to revenue. But I think if we see the prospects here are going to be driven in large part by the overall market demand and whether we start to see some pickup in that level of customer activity. Lewis, anything you want to add to that?
Yes, I think that to differentiate both things, one is that the fact that the outlook we have presented is showing lower revenues and profits going forward based on lower customer activity. It's very different to the fact that we still have a very strong proposition into the market. We have seen contracts like with EDF where we have secured a large security stake, so we are growing on security. We have been able to continue to increase the share of wallet in customers with cloud services. So I think that the proposition in the market and our ability to win is intact. The only thing is that there are less opportunities available, and this is why we have seen a lower customer activity that we are able to address now.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nick Dalfaz from Redburn.
Hi, Nick. Yeah, thanks so much. Just two questions. Could you make a comment on the emergency services network contract? I know there was some comments out of Parliament on that. Is it on time? Is there any contract risk there? And secondly, you've talked about international corporate being weaker than UK corporate, which I guess is a kind of reverse Brexit effect. Are you worried that some of your financial services business could see a slowdown, given that banks don't really know where to invest over the next few months?
Lewis, do you want to comment on the financial services sector?
Yes, I think that it's quite clear that it's a sector that is now questioning how they are going to address some of the uncertainties that could be in the market. However, we have consolidated very well relationships with our financial services customers on unified trading. That is a very clear area on Radiance, that is the global network as well, the relationship we have with SWIFT and so on a global basis. So I think that on the financial services, we feel quite confident. We have consolidated the relationship with Santander. But it's true that there is a sector that is facing some both challenges in terms of regulation as well as some uncertainties due to some of the markets.
ESN, Mark?
Yeah, on the ESN, we continue to deliver against our milestones and contractual obligations of this very important project, and we're making really good progress on getting planning permission for all of the new sites. In fact, 99% of the new sites that we need to roll out now have planning consent. So, you know, good progress on our part of the deliverable of that very important project.
You're not concerned about any late delivery or fines that you might within the contract or anything like that?
I think we're focused on delivering our part of the contract and working well with the Home Office and the other partners, for both the users and the government. It's incredibly important to achieve the cost savings as well as the transformation and capability. But it's a very complex program, and, you know, we won't compromise the safety of the users. in the rollout of the program. So we're confident in our delivery, and we've still got another 9 months of hard work to go to ensure that the project's delivered.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Simon Whedon from Citigroup.
Hi, Simon. Hi. Morning, guys. Two questions, please. One is, what would the net debt have been at the end of December had the full Italy adjustment been put through already? That was one. And then the second one is, with the risk of going over a bit of old ground, could you elaborate a bit more on the nature of the activities within these public sector contracts that has enabled such a sharp slowdown, given that I think we're all at least of the view that the public sector is making more use of communications more extensively in more creative ways, whether it's call centres or cloud or just providing services online, which has obviously been a big thing for quite a few years. And I think intuitively I wouldn't be expecting the public sector to be...
Okay. On the debt question, Simon, do you want to answer that? And then Graham on how our public sector business is changing.
Yes, certainly. I think in terms of the impact on net debt, the main, if we heard, and the key here is less the accounting adjustment, it's the unwind of the inappropriate working capital transactions that's the main component. And as you've seen, we've guided that will lead to an outflow in this financial year of around £325 million. And a portion of that came through in Q3. You'll see we guided at somewhere around about £100 million cash flow impact this year. So if we were able to unwind all of those transactions by the end of December, you'd have seen probably something like another 200 or so impact in the net debt. That's the sort of order that would have had. But the other component in terms of the EBITDA guidance is clearly the impact in the year to date, but it's also then the lower trading for the remainder of the year. I think that covers Italy. I think Graham can pick up on public sector.
I'll just give you a little bit more depth on the contract position. So, when we look at these six contracts, they've either been lost, partially lost, or the services have been discontinued. This is a multi-year issue. I'll just go through it in a moment. So three of those six contracts were exited in 15-16, including all the attributable costs, so out of our run rate in this year. One was partially lost, which was the network component, and the majority of the remaining services we retained, but at lower margins. One is being disaggregated and subject to market competition, and we hope to retain some of that, but at lower margins. And one contract has been split in two. The network component has been lost, and some other services have been retained at lower margins. This is our largest contract, and the network is subject to a multi-year complex migration of all the components and services, of which that is in progress, and will come out over the next 18 months. So it's a complex situation where decisions made between 2013 and 2016, and the actual physical movement of some of this can take years to complete. And these are effectively large bespoke contracts, and the government has been moving and is moving very much to frameworks and purchasing of services, and hence the strengthening of the regional agenda, getting our product and portfolio framework ready across the board, so that we can use the scale of our distribution to drive that through. And that's effectively really sums up this position.
Very good. We've got time for two more questions.
Thank you. Your next question comes from John Caridas from Haitong Securities. Please proceed, you're live in the call.
Morning, John.
That's very kind. Good morning. Thank you. I've got two quick ones. The first one is, I wonder what more Simon can say to those who are whispering that the dividend cover is actually quite tight over the next couple of years. I wonder, as part of that, whether I can first of all confirm that in fiscal 18 you've got about 200 million of exceptional capex still there, 100 ESN, 100 EE integration, and that should actually fall out in fiscal 19. And also, it would be nice to figure out, although I know you'll repurpose this for GFAST and FTTP, it would be nice to figure out what the run rate capex is for FTTC, which is coming to an end, I suspect, by the end of this calendar year. And then secondly, at Christmas time, Mark kindly told us that mobile customers are taking to content and BT Sports. I asked them at the time whether this is anything more than a gimmick, and therefore this is going to be, if it isn't a gimmick, how important a consideration will be it, will that be for you, Gavin and Simon, when you next come to bid for content going forward? Thank you.
I think that's four questions, but we'll let you off because there's some quick ones. Simon on dividend, capex, and FTTC runway, and yep. Mark on content on mobile.
So dealing with the three questions, start with the two capex ones. Firstly, you are correct that there is continuing ESN investment and e-integration investment in 2017-18. And that those elements of the investment plan clearly flow out as then we move into 18 and 19. So you are, your understanding on that is correct. Secondly, on the FTTC, we have within, as I mentioned earlier, our capex, our outlook is based upon our existing investment plans. That did see the NGA program, NGA 1 program, obviously, sort of ramping down. But it did include the first phases of the NGA 2 program in 17-18. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we continue to drive that program and to look at delivering it at ever more productively. But that is based into our existing, the existing investment plan is based in the outlook. And then finally, on the dividend, clearly we've reiterated our outlook for at least 10% growth in DPS for this year and next. This does take full account of the lowered EBITDA and a normalised free cash flow outlook for 17-18. We see you know, buffer built into our plans in order to underpin those dividend commitments.
Very good. Content on mobile?
Yeah, I mean, look, a year ago, the new EE teams set out with the belief that more for more, the more for more strategy would deliver revenue growth. And more for more is about the belief that having the best network in the UK with 100% service and better experience for our customers, along with great execution of our pricing discipline, as well as content, would turn around the revenue performance. So you can see the results on the revenue performance. Content isn't the only part of it, but it is an important component of it. Sport is one element, and music with our partnership with Apple is another. So it's part of a package that is increasing consideration and helping our revenue performance turn around.
I'm trying to figure out whether you can bid more for content because you feel confident that you can defray some of that cost through mobile. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I think it's early days. What is interesting, I think, is that people are using the service, and several hundred thousand customers have signed up for it. We haven't really entered the charging period yet because it was a free period at the beginning of the launch. But if you look at the usage stats, they're clearly watching it, and I think it will be interesting to see how many we retain when they get charged for it. But it's clearly, if you look to the US, the acquisition of AT&T and Time Warner, that is driven fundamentally by content across mobile. That is the cited as the reason for doing it. So I think it is a developing area. I think it strengthens our ability to bid, but I'm not going to go into the details of what that looks like.
Thank you.
Last question, please.
Thank you. Last question comes from Dhananjay Murachandani from Bernstein. Please proceed, you're live in the call.
Morning, Dhananjay.
Yes, good morning, and I'm sorry that I can't end on a high note, but I am a bit surprised that you are not more circumspect about the strategic direction and, more importantly, the resulting complexity of the group in light not only of Tuesday's events, but what obviously seems to be a weaker outlook for global services. What more needs to happen for BT to review the structure of the group, simplify it, and refocus your energies on the UK and on what are undeniably profitable and strong network-centric businesses?
Well, I think I was clear that when I said that we would, we're looking at how the GS business needs to develop from here. We believe there is a strong market for global services type relationships with multinationals. We've learned from the Italian experience, but it is isolated into one country, and if you take the Italian issue out of the business, revenues are marginally up in the year ahead. I think it's fair to say, as Simon said, that the demand and our expectations around growth and pipeline are not as strong as we expected, but ultimately this is a business that we do see potential in. We will look to see how we can improve the underlying cost structure. We'll look to see how we can make the propositions more replicable between customers. Too many of the contracts are bespoke, customer by customer, and that adds unnecessary cost for customers and for us. So there's a lot we can still do for it. And if we can't, in a particular subsidiary, if we can't find a way of making them make a contribution over time, then we will look to see whether or not they're more valuable to somebody else. So, don't leave this call thinking that we are, in some ways, not looking very seriously into the future of GS. We absolutely are. Very good. Well, I just want to wrap up at that point and just say, first of all, thank you. Joining us for a call twice in a week is a real privilege, I'm sure. I wanted to say, it has been a difficult few days. There's no question about that. The Italy situation is something we've taken very seriously. As I said at the beginning, as a management team, we're very angry about it because we've been misled, but it's under control. We've acted, we've put in new management, and we will absolutely learn from it. The issues around public sector and GS have also been things we've needed to look at this quarter. And in many ways, it's unfortunate that these two things have come together and we couldn't give you the full story on Tuesday. But hopefully you've taken away from today that 90% of our business is growing and strong and has got good underlying KPIs, and we have a very strong market position and a clear strategy on it, and that these three issues are things that we've got a clear understanding of and we know how we're going to address. So thank you for joining us, and have a good day.